going on?
Can you get any fishes?
What do you need?
Man, I need one if you can get 20, 30. Let's say, let's start with 20. Can you get 20 of them?
You want all females, I guess?
Well, yeah.
You know we're not supposed to be doing it, but we can do this as long as you want, man. As long as you got the money.
Well, I got money, I'm telling you, but I need it as soon as possible.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you're doing with it, and I don't care, but if you needed some eggs pretty quick, we could get you some caviar tonight.
All right, so how many documents are there?
So there's over 600 pages of court documents relating to Operation Roadhouse. There's pages and pages of investigation reports.
We're in the hotel room, doing our best Sherlock Holmes and Watson impersonations. We're building our evidence board. Court documents are piled everywhere. All over the bed, on chairs, the mini fridge, the desk, and the floor.
But you've also got things like trial briefs, you've got plea agreements, there's even photos by undercover agents of these paddlefish and this paddlefish roe being processed into caviar.
Up to now, we've only heard the cop version of events. These documents could unlock the other side of the story.
I'm just kind of wondering, thinking about looking at these court docs, do you think it gives us more, like, is it telling us a bigger picture?
It definitely confirms a lot of what we already knew about Operation Roadhouse, but there's also so many of these pages and reports about individual suspects that I don't think has really been that clearly reported on.
Are there any dramatic moments?
There definitely are, once you kind of wade through all the technical and legal language. There's definitely some golden nuggets. So there's this one suspect called Fedor Pakanyuk, I think is how you pronounce it. He's also known as Tad. And he was like down at the roadhouse, he was openly bragging about all this caviar that he'd sold, something like $15,000 worth of caviar. And he had these kind of aspirations to build a paddlefish caviar empire. And the undercover cops who end up busting down his door during the takedown were the same guys who he hung out with at the roadhouse. So you can kind of imagine his surprise. He opens the door and these guys who he thought are his friends are on the other side. They kind of like pull him out of the house. They put him in handcuffs. They take him down to the station. He's charged. The weird thing is that after all of that, he still asks these officers if they want to go and get a beer with him.
I mean, what kind of person gets arrested and then asks the cops to go have a beer with him after? It's a little weird.
That's what I thought. Unless, you know, either he's feeling really cavalier about the whole thing, he's not stressed because he genuinely thinks he's innocent, or he's just a master manipulator and he knows exactly what he's doing.
I mean, Fedor sounds like a bit of a character, but also, I don't know, it seems like who is he selling to?
We don't know. Maybe I just haven't got that far in the court docs, but there are so many pages on him, you'd think that answer would be in there somewhere.
After the national takedown in 2013, the Missouri Department of Conservation publishes a press release.
They talk about busting this major paddlefish poaching operation. And it doesn't explicitly say that this was tied to Russian mafia, but it kind of implies it. They've got this massive kind of coordinated effort on their hands.
I mean, basically all the scenes you've described, like I'm picturing a Guy Ritchie film. It sounds a bit surreal.
The media picks up the story and they really go for it with the caviar mafia headlines.
The other tricky thing, of course, with all of this is that loads of the details are redacted. So names of undercover agents, names of suspects. So you do have to do quite a lot of work to kind of pull together some kind of story of what these guys were doing, where they were from, what they were up to. But also, these court documents don't really deal with the question of where all this roe is going. Like, where are they smuggling it to? Is it going overseas? Is it going back to Europe? Where is the market for this stuff? It doesn't even really have a smoking gun that tells us who the people running this whole thing are, beyond the people at the roadhouse.
Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like we have more work to do.
I'm Helen Holliman. From Imperative Entertainment and Vespucci, this is The Paddlefish Caviar Heist. Episode 5, The Caviar Mafia.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
There's two suspects whose names keep coming up in the court documents. Here's what we know. In the mid-2000s, a 30-something Armenian guy named Bogdan Nahapetyan moves to the Ozarks to start a construction business. At some point, he hears there's a lot of money to be made selling black market row. Fast forward to the spring of 2012, and Nahapetyan is hanging out at the roadhouse with some fishermen. They offer to sell him paddlefish. Nahapetyan agrees to buy. He then starts looking to sell the paddlefish to someone else. A friend suggests he call up this dude who drives around in a white Mercedes van. The white van man is later identified as Peter Babenko. He's the owner of a specialty food store in New Jersey. The pair strikes up some sort of arrangement where Nahapetyan sources the paddlefish in Warsaw and Babenko takes them to market. One thing we haven't talked about yet is just how gnarly caviar harvesting is. It's not for the faint of heart. On the regulated market, efforts are made to make caviar harvesting more humane. But for these guys illegally processing caviar, the scene probably went something like this. A live female paddlefish is caught and placed into a cooler filled with ice. The cold puts the fish into a comatose state. It wriggles less. Then, someone takes a sharp knife and slits her belly wide open. If they're lucky, they find two large roe sacks containing around 10,000 eggs each.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is a recording of a phone call. An undercover agent is negotiating one of these paddlefish deals with Nahapetyan.
Yeah, what's going on?
Can you get any fishes?
Well, maybe. What do you need?
Man, I need much if you can get 20, 30. Let's say, let's start with 20. Can you get 20 of them?
I don't know. What do you, when you need them? How quick and all those things?
Well, this weekend I'll be
flying
and
nice
if you can get
them
this weekend.
Okay, you want all females, I guess?
Well, yeah.
The audio isn't super clear, but you can hear Nahapetyan trying to buy 20 female paddlefish. This could be as many as 400,000 eggs. The undercover agent tells Nahapetyan that he might be committing a crime.
You know we're not supposed to be doing it, but we can do this as long as you want, man. As long as you got the money.
I got money, I'm telling you, but I need it as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, that's why I was saying, but if I don't know, I mean, I don't know what you're doing with it, and I don't care, but if you needed some eggs pretty quick, we could get you some caviar tonight.
No, the caviar. I don't want to do the caviar myself.
Nahapetyan turns down the agent's offer to prepare the fish. Speed is of the essence. He'll prepare the caviar himself. But the agent has one last question.
Do you know anybody, any of your buddies or any restaurants or anybody that want to buy some of this caviar?
Give me a reasonable price. $100 is too expensive. You're not going to sell it for that much.
Nahapetian says, give me a reasonable price, and asks how much paddlefish caviar he has to sell.
How much do you have? How much pounds do you have?
We probably have, I probably got left about, 50 pounds, something like that, 45 to 50.
I can call right now and find out for
you. Well, I tell you what, why don't you call right now and find out and see how much you're willing to give and you call me back.
To find out how much he has to spend, Nahapetian needs to call his boss.
Okay.
All right. No problem. I'll talk to you in a minute.
He hangs up.
Thanks. Bye.
With Nahapetian gone, the agent, whose name we've removed, summarizes the call so the recording can be used as evidence.
This is a field investigator. That was Aura Bogdan, 10:44 p.m. on the 19th of April. He wants 20 fish as soon as he can get it. He's going to call somebody about the caviar and let me know.
Soon after, Nahapetian and Babenko arrive in Warsaw to meet the agent and pick up 80 pounds of paddlefish eggs. At retail, caviar is typically sold in 1 to 4 ounce tins. 80 pounds is a lot of roe, maybe 1,200 tins. And when relabeled as high-quality Russian caviar, these eggs could sell for more than $300,000. And this was just a test run. Babenko packs the eggs into ice chests, loads them into his van, and drives off, headed for New Jersey. What he doesn't realize as he crosses state lines is that agents are tracking him all the way up Interstate 95. Although investigators now have all the evidence they need, they don't arrest the pair. Instead, they wait. March 2013, just as snagging season is getting underway for another year. An undercover agent calls Nahapetian to ask if he's interested in buying more paddlefish. This time, Nahapetian says he wants as much caviar as he can get. His friend will visit Warsaw in a few weeks to pick up the goods. But the paddlefish aren't brutally butchered. The sale never happens. Because that week, Randy Doman instructs hundreds of federal agents to execute dawn raids across the country. The morning of the arrests, undercover agents tail Nahapetian from his house to a nearby gas station. They pull into a nearby parking lot and call Nahapetian. They need to talk. When he gets into the agent's vehicle, Nahapetian is served with an arrest warrant. They read his Miranda rights and begin to question him. At first, Nahapetian denies any wrongdoing. They've got the wrong guy. But after further probing, he finally admits that he was offered paddlefish by some guys at the roadhouse. He admits, sure, he bought a few, but he wasn't running any kind of business. The agents handcuff Nahapetian and drive him down to Jefferson City to stand before a judge. During the drive, Nahapetian's tone shifts from one of denial to desperation. He tells the agents that he didn't know it was illegal to buy paddlefish and that he didn't make any money from the transactions anyway. He tells them he was just a middleman for Babenko. He says it wasn't his money or his caviar. Nahapetian also tells the officers that he'd only bought the paddlefish because the agents were offering it. He simply didn't want to go home empty-handed. Anyway, he doesn't want to go to jail. The day of Nahapetian's arrest, a team of officers raid a grocery store in Vineland, New Jersey. After bursting in, they demand to know where is the store's owner, Peter Babenko. The clerk says that his boss isn't there, but gives officers Babenko's cell phone number. When Babenko finally picks up, the officers serve him with a federal arrest warrant and insist he turn himself in. At first, Babenko refuses to give up his location. Maybe he thinks he can run? But 2 days later, he turns up at the U.S. Marshal's office in Camden, New Jersey. A judge reads the charges against Babenko and imposes a $50,000 bail. Nahapetian then accepts a plea deal, a reduced punishment in return for testifying against Bibenco. For his part, Peter Bibenco is charged with conspiring to violate a federal law known as the Lacey Act, which carries a sentence of up to 5 years in prison. Here's Missouri Department of Conservation Randy Doman.
Anytime you transport wildlife illegally across state lines, you have triggered a federal violation of what we call the Lacey Act. And so a lot of these folks that were taking over limits of paddlefish or illegally harvesting the roe and then transporting them back to their home states were at that point committing federal violations.
It seems like the feds hoped that the poachers would flip on their bosses. They want to bring down the whole criminal enterprise. But while a bunch of suspects did plead guilty to violating the Lacey Act, as far as we can tell, no one testified against anyone higher up. No kingpins, no Russian mafia. Something's not sitting right. When we spoke to people in Warsaw, it seemed like everyone knew that this was the work of the Russian mob. One fisherman even suggested that Operation Roadhouse had to be wrapped up because it became too successful. It had gone too deep into the world of Russian organized crime. So why is this not in the documents? Both Arin and I try repeatedly to reach Bogdan Nahapetian and Peter Bibenco for comment, but the closest thing we can get is their lawyer. Luckily, we have some other intel to go on.
One of the documents we've managed to get from the Missouri Department of Conservation is a complete list of the names of suspects picked up during Operation Roadhouse.
There's over 100 names on this list. So we spend some time digging into each of them, trying to make contact. Almost no one answers. Of course they don't.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Would you want to pick up the phone to a reporter asking if you're involved in a crime? So we try a softer approach.
Hello? Hi, it's Aaron. How are you?
Hey, I'm good.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
This is Aaron talking to one of the people from the list. To protect his identity, we're going to call him Simon. We start by asking why he likes to snag.
I fish for paddlefish. Basically for the meat, for the caviar, for all that goodness inside.
When you catch one, what does it feel like?
It's like unexplainable feeling. It's a feeling that you'll never get when you go fishing. It's a very big fish.
But what was he doing with the fish?
I catch him, and then I bring him home, clean him and stuff. Take the caviar out, and then just clean the fish. Just clean the whole inside, take all the meat out. I mostly go for the meat, because the meat is more of what I eat than that fish. The caviar I give to my grandma.
He was just giving it away?
She lives in the same neighborhood as us, so I just bring it to her.
Okay, so he seems like a loving and devoted grandson. What does he remember about the operation?
Do you remember that, too?
Yeah, I remember something like that.
Was that something that affected you?
No, I didn't really catch that much. I just catch 2 paddlefish, and that's good enough for me.
So they didn't give you any problems, really?
No.
It sounds like Simon is denying even being arrested as part of Roadhouse. He says he stayed within the limits. In fact, he seems supportive of the conservation department. This is weird.
The right thing to do if people are like stealing and stuff, that's very bad.
Simon sounds about as far from a big time caviar smuggler as you can get. I've spent months now working on this story. We've heard detailed accounts from multiple sources. I've even seen the cabinet of trophies awarded for a job well done. I don't know if Simon is hiding something, and it's pretty hard to reach any conclusion based on our brief call, but I feel pretty sure I wasn't speaking to a mafia don. So we go back to the list. We're looking for any links or patterns in the names. Then we find something. A bunch of the suspects all come from the same town, Sedalia. It's about 35 miles north of Warsaw. when I first read about Operation Roadhouse, one of the most jarring parts was this idea of Russian-speaking fishermen hanging out in the middle of the Ozarks. This bit of the Midwest isn't exactly famous for being cosmopolitan. Wouldn't they seem out of place? But it turns out Sedalia, Missouri does actually have a very large Eastern European community. It's mainly expats who moved there after the collapse of the Soviet Union in the 1990s. And Eastern Europeans from Sedalia have been snagging in Warsaw for years. They might have been over-harvesting paddlefish eggs to make caviar, but it was more likely for personal consumption. Or in Simon's case, for his grandma. So if these fishermen from Sedalia weren't involved in the big smuggling conspiracy, who was? I had to confront a thought. What if there was no big conspiracy? How would that make me feel? I mean, if there isn't a dark underworld at the bottom of this whole thing, would I feel, I don't know, shortchanged? Being totally honest, I would actually feel seriously relieved. Not just for the poor endangered paddlefish, but for myself. I need to confess something. There's a decent chance that I may have been complicit in this crime. Let me explain. Around the time Operation Roadhouse was going down, I was living in New York. It's a city where if there's an unusual way to make money, then someone else is probably already doing it. There I was in my early 20s, trying to make a name for myself as a writer. I had more than a few financial dry spells, to put it lightly. I needed a job on the side to help pay the bills. 12-hour restaurant shifts were leaving me wiped out and too tired to write, even on my days off. One day, I was on Craigslist, job hunting, when something caught my eye. Searching for a truffle dealer / sorter. The job required someone who could weigh and smell truffles. Not the chocolate kind, but the extremely expensive fungus kind that Amex Black Card customers crave. The gig would also require selling them alongside other specialty foods, like caviar. Are you kidding me? I'd do it for free, I thought. And so I became a caviar dealer for 99% of the Michelin-starred restaurants in New York City. But the luxury food world is the Wild West. Unlike your FDA-controlled foods at the grocery store, in this universe, things can go unregulated. Sometimes all you have to go on is trust. As a dealer, there are times where you're low on product, and so you're forced to quickly buy off of other dealers to keep your customers happy. You have to take people at their word. And so, if black market paddlefish roe was being packaged as premium caviar and driven to New York, it's possible that I was the person pushing this stuff. And if I was selling Roadhouse Roe, then was I doing the bidding of the Russian mafia? There is only one person who might know. My old boss.
They're not catching paddlefish and harvesting their eggs for no reason. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that they were taking part in the black market caviar trade.
That's next time. The Paddlefish Caviar Heist is a production of Imperative Entertainment and Vespucci, and is written and hosted by me, Helen Holliman. For Imperative Entertainment, the executive producer is Jason Hoke. For Vespucci, the executive producers are Daniel Turkin and Johnny Galvin. David Gavi Herbert is executive producer. Based on original reporting by David Gavi Herbert, the series producer is Aaron Keller. The story editor is Matt Willis. Thomas Curry is the managing producer. Audio recording by Austin Sizzler at Eastside Studios. Audio mix and sound design by Matt Peaty. Special thanks to Michelle Nyhaus for additional reporting.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.